Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
This is your call to action. Get prepared, America. Economy, survival, energy, disasters. This is USAPrepares.com. Informative radio, educational radio. Interact now by emailing instructor at USAPrepares.com or text at 434-390-7953. Class, please take your seats. Now, your instructor, Vincent Fennelli.
Everyone all set? Cocked? Locked? Here we go. Your dial is set correctly to USA Prepares. I was just talking with Jason before the broadcast about Psychology 101, freshman year, and conditioned response. Maybe I'll tell that story someday. You know, I'm delighted to be broadcasting with your newest instructor. Her name is Dr. Amber Abernathy. She graduated with a PhD in experimental psychology from Oklahoma State University. She's currently an associate professor of psychology at Missouri State University and the Mary Charlotte Bayless Sheely Chair in Conscientious Psychology. She has interests in conscientiousness, personality, changing personality traits, psychophysiology, leadership, mindfulness, meditation, self-regulation, social status, psychobiology of the stress response, the differences in the sexes, stress and health, dominance, social hierarchies, Machiavellianism, empathy, and autism. And unlike many of your instructors, actually most of your instructors, Dr. Abernathy is able to hold down a job. Welcome, Dr. Abernathy.
It's all because of conscientiousness. That's the only reason.
And I was telling Jason that I'm really looking forward to this. Oh, class, we won't be taking calls today. But I'm really looking forward to this because maybe we'll get a slight insight as to why our adult children who have never been married, I mean, Mrs. Fennelli and my children who have never been married, have not found that ideal spouse yet. You know, they're in one's mid-30s, another one's mid-30s, another one is about 30. So maybe we can find out a little bit about that. So I'm so glad you're here with us. And you and I met years ago at an event that Dr. Sheely had, and we sat across from each other, you know, at a dinner table, and it was a wonderful experience. And I'm so glad that we've had a chance to, you know, teach a broadcast class together. I'm really looking forward to hearing all about conscientiousness. It's something that Dr. Noam Sheely talks about very often. And so why don't we start with your background, if that's okay with you, Dr. Abernathy?
That works great for me. I came from Oklahoma State University and studied experimental psychology. So I tell people I am not clinical. I don't come to help you. I just come to study you and find out the greater understanding of people, and then someone else can help you clinically. So that's not my job. But my background actually in research was looking at dominance hierarchies and status and what made people on top. And stress was a big part of that, how stress plays a role in that. The lab I came from did a lot with physiological measures. So we do skin conductance. We do spit samples for things like oxytocin and testosterone and cortisol. And so that's kind of where I came from. But then I started noticing that personality played a role in this top position. It's kind of a no-duh, but, you know, when you're studying research, you kind of get on one path and forget to look at the greater picture. So it happened to be that a couple times we threw some personality questionnaires in there, and found some things. And so that changed my trajectory a little bit. So I still look at dominance hierarchies and social status and stress. But now I really kind of focus a little bit more on how personality plays a role in that.
And so are we talking about how people arrive at the top? I'm talking about like a Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about?
Yes and no. So I studied it a couple of different ways. The reason I got into that personal story here is I worked with a group of women, and they were really backstabbing on each other. So they were nice one day, pro-social, helping, friendly, and then the next moment they would kind of cut someone down. And they still stayed at the top position doing that. And I kept saying, why are they at the top position? How are people still following them when they also cut people down? So I decided to go back to college and get my degree and got it in psychology and kept going. And this was such an interesting thing for me to study. So I found what's called perceived popularity. And these are individuals that use pro-social, helping-type behaviors, as well as coercive, so making or forcing others to go along with it. So I was looking more on kind of this personal basis. I did some research at high school looking at, you know, this happens at high school. I did look in the workplace, this happens at the workplace. But then I elaborated on that, and you do see this in CEOs and business people. So some of my research then started looking at the empathy component. So do you feel for that person? And, you know, a lot of your CEOs and business people might not have the highest level of empathy because they can't be empathetic for everyone. They need to make those tough decisions. Sometimes they have to force you to go along with it. So, yes, I am seeing that same kind of behavior in CEOs, head of companies, business people, but even at a much lower level, just in your day-to-day groups, in your friend groups, you know, sometimes this is referred to as the mean girl effect, but it's not just with girls. But you do see this combination of pro-social strategies and coercive strategies. So I'm going to help you out. I'm going to make you go along with this. And, you know, the big thing is knowing when to use those strategies.
No, it's interesting that you said that. I remember, I'll put an exclamation point on what you just said. I remember being in an elevator at the county building in Springfield, Missouri. I had to do some paperwork to have an expo. And I got in this elevator, and there were some women in there. And they kind of looked at me. They were already in the elevator. And they looked at me. They looked at each other. And then they continued to beat up, you know, their coworkers, you know, verbally to each other. I mean, they're willing to to talk mean about them, and, you know, did you know what Sally did, and boy, it's terrible, and, you know, what, you know, Bill did, etc. So that's exactly what you were talking about. And yet, you know, they put a smile on it and get out of the elevator, and everything seemed to be okay. But they were kind of mean-spirited in this jousting with people that weren't present, you know, the people that they were picking on. Like, did you see the kind of donuts she got? You know, how dare her get donuts like that? I mean, little things, I guess, are big to little people, right?
Right. That's absolutely what they're doing. And what they're doing is keeping their status. I am better than that person. So when that person's not around, let me show my authority, let me show my leadership, and let me cut them down. If I can lower them to some degree, then it just keeps me in the higher position. And then, like I said, they also use that pro-social. So they also come in and say, oh, can you help me out with this? I'm friendly. I'm going to help you. I'm going to do things for you. And so people really get confused by this type of person. It's like, are they helpful? Are they harmful? I see them as nice. I see them as mean. And that's how they're keeping that position. Let me cut you down when it's beneficial. Let me help you when it's beneficial.
Very interesting. So the rest of that story was I got off the elevator and I went up to the counter and they wanted me to fill out some forms. Actually, the county demanded that I fill out these forms for an expo. I said, sure. And so the lady just pushes the forms across the counter and says, fill these out. Sit over there. You know, they had a little table. I could sit at. And I said, I looked at them and I said, you know, I'm not sure I can do this right. And I want to make sure I follow this procedure correctly. So would you come over there and sit with me and we can do this together? She was not expecting that I was going to tie her up and that I read slowly. And it was a great jousting that we went through, you know, with smiles on our faces. And I just wasn't going to let her push me around. So that's kind of how I responded. Any comments about that, Dr. Abernathy?
I think that's a great way to respond because it doesn't let them continue to get the upper hand. I think my biggest issue with people that kind of, again, this is shown to work. I did a study looking actually at preschoolers' behaviors. Now, they're not as kind of backstabbing. Theirs is more physical aggression, but I've seen it in all age groups. It tends to work. But my biggest issue that I have with it is that people don't stand up to them. And that's actually why I started studying this, is it wasn't so much that this one girl did this, that one cashier, you know, person at the courthouse did it. It was the fact that why does no one else call them out on that? So I think by calling someone out, it doesn't elevate their position. It shows that, no, we're equal, or maybe even my mentality is higher than yours in that case. And so I think that's the best thing to do. I think you handled that right. And maybe made them think a little bit about their behavior.
Dr. Abernathy, I've been audited many, many times at the state level and at the federal level. Now, tax return kinds of audits, sales tax returns, federal income tax returns, etc. And we prepare our own tax returns. We don't use preparation service. So we know the rules because we've read the rules. And so when we get audited, you know, it's like I'm being told exactly how I'm going to behave. You are going to do this. And what I do is, you know, they say, all right, prove you have this. This is a legitimate deduction. And I have, you know, boxes of receipts and things. And what I do is I tell them I have it. I have the proof. I've got the notes on the side of the tax form, the tax documentation. I know exactly why I took what deductions. And I have the receipts to prove it. It just takes me a long time to find them. They're in this box. And I'm going to look through them because you need that to, you know, to complete your audit. So just give me a few minutes and I'll do my best to find it. And it takes me forever. And they hate it. So is that another example of what you've been talking about? And not standing up to them?
Yes, it can be, definitely. What you're doing is kind of keeping the control at least equal, if not pulling it back to yourself. So when I study leadership, so not just these hierarchies, but leadership, you know, part of that is simply exerting your control as well. And I don't necessarily mean in a bad way. It doesn't mean that we have to, you know, be bullies. Of course, I'm not going that direction. But simply the fact of I have some level of control in my life, and I'm not going to allow you to take charge. And so just simply saying, you know, this is how I'm going to do it as well. I understand your rules. I understand what you're looking for, but I need this.
You know, there's several definitions of management. I don't know if this is taught anymore, but one of the definitions from the School of Management, I attended the School of Management back in the 70s at a different university. But I was taught that management is getting people to do things. And then I was taught that that's just a little better definition of that. And that's, and I'm talking about in business, in a business setting, or in a military setting. Another definition is getting people to do what you want them to do. Another definition is even better than that, getting people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it. Now, my definition is getting people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it because they think it's their idea. I'd love to hear your comments on that when we come back after this short commercial break. Dr. Amber Abernathy is with us.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have.
your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers, but if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need, just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email. advertise@gcnlive.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin? And as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Class is back in session. Turn up the volume. USAPrepares.com with the original survival economist, Vincent Fennelly.
So back in the 70s, I learned that there's two styles of management. One is Theory X and one is the other's Theory Y. Theory X is your employees hate being at work. They don't want to be there. And the only reason they're there is because they need the money. And the only reason that they perform at their function or their job is because they've been beaten by the boss. So the boss's job is to beat the employees. That's Theory X. Theory Y is the opposite. Your employees want to be at that job site. They want to love what they're doing. They want to be contributors. They want to do an excellent job. And all you have to do as a manager is encourage them and provide them the tools, the opportunity, and, you know, lead the way. And so that's where my definition of management, which is getting people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it because they think it's their idea, came from. Your comments, please.
I think that almost always the best type of management is where you get them to do it because they are intrinsically motivated. It's not for the paycheck. It's because they want to do it. It's because they're really involved. If they're doing something only based on some extrinsic reward to get done with the end of the day, to get that paycheck, then you're not going to have happy people working for you. And if management only forces ideas on people, then you're not going to have a productive work area. The only thing that I can say is the but, maybe there's always a but in research, but the only thing I can say is a but, is there are times when for the good of the company, the manager has to say, this is it, there's no other way. We see this in parenting as well. You know, for the most part, the best parents are the ones that reason and explain to the child and are, you know, supportive. But there are times, like when safety is an issue, if it's a dangerous area, then you simply say, we're doing it this way. You can't go outside. I'm not going to explain why you just can't. I mean, right now. And you see this sometimes in businesses as well, especially when we were talking about kind of levels of management. A lot of times those upper managers have to make decisions and not care if the person's intrinsically motivated or not, or, you know, not care if this is going to be make all employees happy. It's got to keep the business running. So I would say most often in most managing type positions, trying to get your coworkers, your, you know, employees on board and understanding and thinking that it's their idea and they're sharing in the wealth is going to be the best idea. But there are times when that kind of direct, this is how it's going to be, comes in. And that's where in my research I've studied the trait of Machiavellianism. And you actually see that a lot. It's often called the successful CEO has that Machiavellianism. And that is basically where the ends justify the means. And they're only thinking about that outcome end goal.
I remember a point in our parenting lives when I had a chat with our daughter. And she said, But Mindy's allowed to stay out, you know, till midnight. You know, she was a young child. And, but, you know, Mindy's allowed to do that. Why can't I do that? And I said, well, you know, when you were born, I did not get an owner's manual with you. I did not get an instruction book with you. I'm figuring this out as we go. And by the way, I am not Mindy's parent. Mindy has her own parents. So her parents are doing what they think is best, and I'm doing what I think is best. And so that has happened to me, and that, I guess that happens a lot in the military when, you know, the squad goes out on a mission, and just before the mission, you know, it's a dangerous mission, and the sergeant or the lieutenant says, look, this is pretty dangerous, and some of you aren't going to come back. And the guys say, look, I don't want to go. And they go, that's too bad. You're going. So it does happen, yes. Would you like to talk about how you started working for Dr. Norm Shealy?
Yeah, it actually transitions from that dominance hierarchy into conscientiousness and meeting Norm. So I graduated in 2015 from Oklahoma State University and was on the job market. You know, they tell you when you get a PhD, like less than 1% of the population has a PhD. They don't tell you then the jobs are like 0.5%. It's a hard job market there. But I really got really just blessed. What I did was I did some job searches, and there was one here at Missouri State University, and it was for a teaching position, experimental psychology, but then the research was to emphasize on conscientiousness. And what happened was Dr. Shealy, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with.
Hold that. Dr. Abernathy, hold that thought. We're going to another break, and we'll be right back. And then can please continue with that thought.
Hey, everybody. If you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
As the Chinese government says they're done investigating the origins of the coronavirus pandemic and blame it on nature, many in the scientific community says there's nothing natural about this virus and are pointing at a Wuhan, China laboratory as the source. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Fox News says this is a cover-up by the Chinese government.
It's all circumstantial, to be sure. The people who could clean this up, the people who could answer these questions, have refused to do so. The Chinese Communist Party knows where this came from. They know who Patient Zero was. They could fix this. If I'm wrong, they could embarrass Mike Pompeo. Come on, bring it. Show the world that this didn't come from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. They're not going to do that because they know that they covered this up in the same way that Chernobyl was covered up for so long. And we saw the same results. Millions of people dead.
It is Memorial Day 2021. Couple wise reminders. Don't wish anyone a happy Memorial Day. This is not Christmas. And don't disregard its importance. USA Radio News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who've helped people that have been injured or wronged. Have you been diagnosed with cancer? Are you one of the millions who have taken Zantac or other generic versions of this popular drug to help treat stomach issues? Then pay close attention to this message. The FDA said it detected low levels of a probable cancer-causing chemical known as NDMA in Zantac and other generic forms of this popular drug. They've banned sales and even removed it from the market. If you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've taken Zantac or a generic equivalent, call the legal helpline now. You could receive a free cash award and have your medical expenses covered. And there's no upfront cost to you. They only get paid if you win. So please call now. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. That's 800-998-7173.
President Biden on Sunday in Delaware reflects on his own military son's loss to those that have lost a loved one this Memorial Day.
Bo didn't die in the line of duty, but he was serving the Delaware National Guard unit in Iraq for a year. That was one of the proudest things he did in his life. So thank you for allowing us to grieve together today. I know how much the loss hurts. I know the black hole that leaves in the middle of your chest. It feels like you may get sucked into it and not come out. Greetings like this in gatherings help, and while I know nothing I can say to ease the pain, I just know that each year it gets a little bit easier. And I promise you the day will come when the mention of the name of your son or daughter, husband, wife, they will in fact bring it, not a tear to your eye, but a smile to your lips. Folks, and I hope that day comes sooner than later.
The oldest man to climb Mount Everest is now an American. Dan Naraki reports.
A Chicago man has become the oldest American to climb to the summit of Mount Everest. 75-year-old Arthur Muir returned from the mountain on Sunday, making it to the summit earlier this month. A previous attempt in 2019 had to be called off after Muir suffered an ankle injury. From the USA Radio News Ohio Bureau, I'm Dan Naraki.
Thanks for listening. We do appreciate it. I'm Lance Pry, and this is USA Radio News.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
No whining. Only expert guests and seasoned opinions. Instruction that matters. At the controls, Vincent Finelli.
That's just a quick update. Tomorrow, hour number one, I'll be talking about, it'll be just me, I'll be talking about tips from my unorganized, unfinished, and not for sale book. Specifically, why riding lawnmowers break down. Not only the mower, but the engine. So both the engine and the mower, why they break down. And also we'll be talking about why cars overheat and why mechanics can't seem to find the cause. I'll tell you what the cause is and what you can do about it and what I do about it. Hour number two, Bert Bertone, CEO, is going to be explaining why the cryptocurrency market collapsed yesterday. So that's tomorrow. Dr. Amber Abernethy is with us. And you were telling us about how you started working with Dr. Norm Shealy. Please continue.
Yes, I was looking at some different job opportunities that were out there, and I came across this one that said that they wanted some research in the personality trait of conscientiousness. Well, it just so happened that two of my recent research findings right at that time was actually on effortful control. And effortful control is a subcomponent of conscientiousness. So I was like, look, I've been doing this. I've actually been researching conscientiousness without at the time knowing exactly what I was looking at, but I was finding that. So that social hierarchy, that dominant individual, it wasn't just that they were using those pro-social and coercive strategies. It was that they had conscientiousness or effortful control, and they knew when to use them. So I decided to apply for the job, and I came along and met Dr. Norm Shealy. And what had happened is Dr. Shealy had seen over and over and over again, he saw that the people that were healthier, that did well, that, didn't get as sick or got over their sickness had this personality trait. So he wanted research done on it. And I was like, look, I've been doing this. And so I did some interviews here at the college and met him. He is a fascinating person, a genius. He has now been kind of the emphasis on my work, and kind of I've grown from there and doing other things outside even of conscientiousness. But I met him through this job search, and like I said, it's been many years now that he has been kind of a mentor to me in research, in help, in understanding where we're going in life.
Yeah, and isn't it wonderful having a friend such as Dr. Norm Shealy? Now, I think you and I are extremely blessed. And class, I think you're going to find out a little bit about Dr. Norman Shealy as well today during this class with Dr. Amber Abernethy. Can you tell us about your relationship with Dr. Norm Shealy? How does it work?
So it is a great relationship because it's kind of twofold. He lets me run research with whatever I am interested in, with my own ideas. So he is not the over-commanding manager that is standing there telling me what I should and shouldn't do. But at the same time, we will have research meetings. I'll discuss things that I've done. He'll tell me ideas along the way. And then he will also tell me ideas that he is looking at, and then I'll help him run that. So some examples of that, I was looking at the concept of self-regulation. It's, again, kind of a subcomponent of this conscientiousness, and can we regulate our emotions? And I said, I think if we can increase that, if we can change self-regulation, we can increase conscientiousness. But I said, how do we change self-regulation? Like, how do I fix that? And he said, if you can teach people to change their body temperature, then you can actually teach them to self-regulate. That's a small component of self-regulation. And so I said, all right, how do we do that even? And so he said, finger thermometers, and you can have them walk through this visualization of warmth. And great idea. I took it and ran with it. We actually ran it this last semester. We're looking for more participants, but we had about 30 last semester, and that's what we were looking at, is can they change their body temperature, and then overall, does that change self-regulation and conscientiousness? And so that was a great just meeting and discussion with that. Then he's came to me a few times and said, I'm really working on pulse electronic magnetic frequencies. And I said, I've got to Google this. And so we've worked together, him explaining what he's doing. And so we started running research on that. I started gathering participants from him, for him. And we've done it on several different things. He's had oils that he's come along with, and let's study this oil. And because my background is in experimental research, I've got the idea for design, and do we have a control group, and what can we do? And then I can do kind of a wide variety of people. He reaches a lot of people through radio broadcast and his clients. But the people that I reach are more college-based, so we can get a great sample and look at what he's interested in and what I'm interested in, and then combine them. So like I said, he's been a great mentor. Have you thought about this? Have you looked at this? He sends me articles on things. And then in the same aspect, I can write him back and say, hey, I thought about this. And so we really work together that way. So hands on, hands off. He is wonderful at being a mentor, but letting me make my own decisions along the way.
It sounds to me like theory one, providing you with the opportunities, the tools, some guidance, and letting you run with the tasks, and then letting you figure out tasks that you're interested in, blending them all together, which makes for a great reason to enjoy your profession. And it sounds like you really do enjoy your profession, because he is a theory Y manager. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. He's so passionate in everything he does. Everything that he does is strictly based on wanting to help people and wanting to understand. And so he just makes it where you want to do the same. Meeting with him and seeing his excitement on something or seeing his new idea or direction makes me go, let me think about that. Let me look into that. And I have always enjoyed my job. I've always enjoyed the research. So when he, you know, adds new ideas and new insight, and again, yes, let me make my own ideas out of that, then that intrinsic motivation just grows. And so I think both of us are enjoying what we're doing. And, you know, I feed off of his excitement. So you're right. As a manager, he is wonderful at making me come up with my ideas and making me become motivated on my own. And, yes, I enjoy everything that we do.
It's quite fascinating. And here at my function, if you will, at Genesis Communications Network as a broadcaster, the owner of the network is very much the same, with one slight difference. He lets me do whatever I want to do completely. But he knows that there's certain things that I won't do. You know, I am not going to get the network in trouble. He knows that I'm not going to do that. So he lets me do whatever I want, literally. And whenever I call him, which is, you know, just a couple times a year over the last almost a decade, he just says, you know, I don't get any complaints about you. And I think that what that means is that translates into just keep doing what you're doing. You're not causing any problems. We haven't been sued, those kinds of things. And the FCC hasn't come down on us. So he lets me alone. And I have a feeling that Dr. Shealy is so pleased with your work that he lets you run off with ideas and concepts and tasks that you want to learn more about and study and research. So that's my impression on your relationship with Dr. Shealy. You mentioned controlling the body's temperature. Can you share with us what you've learned about can we control our temperature?
Yes, we can. We can raise it a degree or two after some practice. Part of the easiest way to do that is through the visualization, like picture the sun beaming down on your hand. We actually play a little recording of Dr. Shealy's voice saying that for them. And so it's kind of the visualization. It's thinking about your hand actually warming up. We've noticed that it takes them a few times to kind of get involved and really concentrate on that. But over time, they can learn to raise their body temperature a couple of degrees. And then by default, you can actually do it the opposite way and lower it just slightly as well. And so what it is, there's been some great research looking at the concept of self-regulation. And the idea is that it's like a muscle. And so the more we do it, the stronger it gets. But it can also wear out if you're on a diet and you're trying to regulate, you know, what you're eating, and then you also have to watch what you say because you're at a faculty meeting or whatever you might, on the radio, whatever you're doing, then sometimes you just simply wear out and you don't have any control and you break the diet or you do whatever. So the idea is if we can strengthen self-regulation over time, then you can be better at all of those things. And so simply by changing your body temperature, learning to regulate your body temperature, it actually strengthens all those other areas of your life. I mean, that sounds kind of crazy, but it's actually true, because what's happening is you're learning control. You're learning to control one aspect of your body, which then strengthens all. And so we saw that we had this class. It was a physiology class that a coworker of mine does, and we thought, what better way than teaching physiology by having them use their own body's physiology. And so we had finger thermometers, and at the end of every class period, that's what they would do, is put the finger thermometer on, hear it, and record if they'd raised it or not. And then, like I said, we're looking at, we haven't got all that data, and we'd like more participants. I always like more people. But we're looking to see if that did change their personality trait over the course of the semester as well.
Are you saying that, well, let me ask it this way. Does conscientiousness somewhat equal control?
Yes. So it has been related to control, self-control, effortful control. Yes, big part of conscientiousness is having control over your emotions, your body, your language, and even to some degree your environment. Another big part of conscientiousness is order. And so conscientiousness is very highly related to levels of control.
When I was at the university back in the 70s, I had a financial instructor. And he taught the class about a concept. It has to do with investing and how to invest your Federal Reserve notes, if you will. And he called it mini max regret. M-I-N-I, max, M-A-X, regret. And what mini-max regret is going through the, you can apply this to life as well, going through life, and so at that moment, what would your maximum regret be? So the way I taught this in my classes is, so visualize driving down the interstate, and you're in the slow lane with your car or truck. And flying up on the left-hand lane, the fast lane, if you will, is a truck, and he's overtaking you. And as he does, you notice that he has a ladder, an extension ladder, in the back bed of his pickup truck. And then he pulls in front of you. So now he's in front of you. You're both doing 65 or so. And that ladder is, you see, it's not secured. So what would your maximum regret be at that moment? And that would be that ladder flying out of the truck, caught by a gust of wind by a passing semi, and flying through your windshield. So what do you do to minimize that maximum regret? You back off. Is that what conscientious people do?
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, Take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Join me, George Norrie, for Contact in the Desert Worldwide Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to the 28th. Contact in the Desert will be an epic weekend of exploration into UFOs, ancient alien civilizations, consciousness, AI, crop circles, and cutting-edge science. More than 130 presentations, 67 speakers, and 2 extra weeks to view our extraordinary lineup. Get your tickets today at contactinthedesert.com. It's time to make contact. Contactinthedesert.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system. And it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Pencils, paper, notebooks, iPads. Class is now in session. USAPrepares.com. Educational radio. Set your memory to high power. Your USAPrepares.com instructor, Vincent Finelli, at the controls.
Dr. Abernathy, I mentioned mini-max regret, something I learned at the university in the early 70s. And that would be minimizing that maximum regret of, in the example that I gave, of that ladder going through your windshield, by somebody pulling in front of you with an unsecured load, if you will, in the back of their pickup truck. Is that an example of conscientiousness?
Yes, it is. What is happening is conscientious people have perseverance and industriousness. So they're going to work hard, they're going to keep working, and they're planners. So they're going to take into consideration what's going on in the scenario. How do I get that they follow through? How do I get what I want? What can I fix in that situation? You know, how can I make it through to what I want to do? And they're going to work hard to do it. The only thing that maybe conscientious people don't necessarily do as much as their planners, and they want control, and they might not always see the negative thing ahead. The only study that I've ever seen that says high conscientiousness can be a bad thing, the only study, is that people that were unemployed for a long period of time that had high conscientiousness had higher depression rates. So when you're driving along and you think you've planned for everything and, you know, you've made all the plans on the road and you've checked your car and the tires and you're driving safe, and then that ladder comes out of nowhere, that can be very hard for high conscientious people because they've planned and they're followed through. Now, if they have enough time to see that problem, then they'll do everything they can to overcome it. And I think that's definitely a part of conscientiousness and grit, just to kind of keep going. gain with that, resiliency, all of those components. But again, the only issue would be if they don't see, if it comes out of nowhere, that can be somewhat hard for conscientious people because they think they've done everything to kind of keep going and follow through.
There's a guy who is well known in the electric car business. I won't mention his name. But, you know, sometimes I look at what happens and I think that, gosh, I don't think he's fully thought this through. For example, he touts how electric cars are wonderful, but what he doesn't consider is that we don't have the grid and the power generation to convert all of these gasoline and diesel engines to electric cars and trucks. So, and then this guy is known for bouts of depression. He really is. And then he'll go off and say things about cryptocurrencies, and he'll cause a mini crash, a flash crash, because, you know, he'll talk about how his company will or won't accept them or will change his mind. And he's well followed. And I think that that's a great example of what you're saying, but I won't mention his name. Does that sound like the depression that you're talking about and not realizing all of the consequences of one's actions?
It definitely could be. I mean, I think there's a lot of variables at play, but I think that that definitely can be part of it, is you think you've planned and you have this idea and you're following through and you're doing, you know, you're working, you think you have control, but maybe not taking into consideration all of these outside aspects. And that can be problematic. An upcoming study we're doing, we're going to look at perfectionism, which is related to conscientiousness, but there is adaptive perfectionism and maladaptive perfectionism. And so both, you know, the person is driven and trying to do their best, but one of them can be very maladaptive because it's related to stress and anxiety and depression, because maybe they're not thinking of all components, and they can't stand being derailed. So I think part of that, it might not just be conscientiousness, but I think it can definitely play a role. Again, conscientiousness is a great thing. It's very rarely negative. But if things derail us, then it can be problematic.
Do you have a number, a percentage of people who exhibit conscientious traits? Is there such a thing as X percentage of people exhibit these traits?
No, because the way that most of the studies are done is it's based on the sample itself. So age actually makes a difference in conscientiousness. The older we get, the more conscientious we are. So your scores are going to go up with age. And so that's going to make a difference. You know, people at college should ideally be a little more conscientious. You know, it takes a little bit more of the responsibility, the follow through. Certain jobs have more conscientiousness in that job. So it's going to make a difference what your sample is. So I can't say on average. The other big problem that we have with research, big problem, is it's self-report for the most part. We do sometimes use, you know, spouse report, friend report. We've done stranger report, actually, on what they see in a person. But one of the big things is you're reporting on yourself. And so people, yeah, I'm organized. Yeah, I have control. Yeah, I'm responsible. And they're only seeing it through rose-colored glasses.
Yeah. We're going into the final break of this hour, Dr. Abernethy. And after the top of the hour news commercials, we'll be back and we'll be talking more with you about your pulse electromagnetic frequency results, depression and sapphire, insomnia, the oils that you talked about, why you study conscientiousness, personalities, etc. I'm really looking forward to this. So we'll be right back, class, right after the top of the hour news and commercial announcements.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.